KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. A study by New Mexico's health department shows a 43% decline in suicides among Native Americans in that state over a year's time. That positive trend is in contrast to the national suicide rate, which is back up to an all-time high, according to current data from the CDC. In some states and tribal communities, advocates are finding new ways to engage Native residents in suicide prevention programs that offer promising models for places where the numbers are persistently troubling. More after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Thousands of U.S. Forest Service workers were fired in recent weeks, part of the Trump administration's efforts to shrink the federal government. A federal board this week ordered the U.S. Department of Agriculture to rehire those it fired. Before this development, Grist and IPR's Izzy Ross spoke to one of those workers.
Marie Richards is a citizen of the Sault Ste. Marie tribe of Chippewa Indians. A little over a year ago, she joined the Forest Service as a tribal relations specialist in northern Michigan.
The congressional boundaries of any forest, and then there's actually what the forests own and manage within it. But you'll pass right by it on your way to 115.
Yeah, see, I'm still doing my job and I don't even work there. That's how much I love it.
That change was sudden. Richards got a phone call from her supervisor on a Saturday in mid-February, telling her she'd been let go.
I hung up the phone and I think I screamed, and my neighbor may or may not have heard me scream. I don't have the heart to ask him.
Richards was one of thousands of probationary workers targeted for layoffs as part of the Trump administration's efforts to cut costs and shrink the federal government.
None of us deserved this. We all work hard. We all work hard and we're dedicated because we're taking care of the land.
That land includes almost 1 million acres and two treaty territories. Tribal nations ceded that to the federal government, which has a responsibility to keep it in trust for indigenous peoples. As a liaison, Richards was part of that. As a tribal citizen, the work was also personal. She worries about what will happen to that trust responsibility as people like her are laid off.
That's a promise. That's an agreement between the federal government and tribal nations that there are things. We have treaty rights, and without the people doing the work to take care of the land, where is that? Mm-hmm. Where is that? We have to have the public trust to also have tribal trust.
Richards isn't sure what's next for her. But one thing that is certain is her desire to keep doing work with tribes and heritage.
That was Izzy Ross speaking with Marie Richards. As of Thursday, Richards had yet to be reinstated. This weekend, AMC's crime thriller Dark Winds, based on Tony Hillerman novels, begins its third season. Brian Bull has this preview.
We all have a line that runs down the middle of our heart. That line separates monsters from men.
The new episodes find Navajo Tribal Police Lieutenant Joe Leaphorn wrestling with his conscience following his actions last season. Actor Zahn McLernan.
You know, he struggles with guilt, that moral gray area he's kind of found himself in, questions his decisions, his moral compass, and what choices, how they may have cost him. It just puts him into a lot of fear and anxiety this season.
Kiowa Gordon plays Jim Chi. He says this season finds the ex-FBI agent trying to gain acceptance back into the Navajo community and reconcile with a childhood tormentor who suspected in a boy's death.
He has a chance to confront his demon, so to speak, you know, which is like a Shorty Bowlegs. He's trying to figure out if this guy is actually a murderer to this child.
Dark Winds has already been greenlit for a fourth season. Showrunner Joe Wirth says the cast and crew are all dedicated to making the show authentic and respectful of Native culture.
Without denigrating Hillerman's accomplishments or his work at all, I have a sense that he took the Navajo story and told it through his own lens. But I think it was somewhat off-putting for indigenous people who were reading that stuff. What I really wanted to do on this TV show was reappropriate the stories back to the Navajo people.
The season 3 premiere of Dark Winds is Sunday on AMC. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
See Renewal's expertise in energy, housing, land use, fire protection, and more in multi-jurisdictional environments helps tribes leverage existing assets, grow capacity, and gain competitive advantage. See Renewal supports this show. SEERenewal.com. Support by DT Track, your healthcare partner, providing access to a nationwide network of qualified healthcare temporary staff, including medical billing professionals that optimize your revenue cycles. DT Track will be at the Reservation Economic Summit, booth 214. Support provided by First National Bank Alaska, offering a one-solution, tailored approach to meet the financial needs of Alaskans by providing banking services, loans, investments, and more to help shape a brighter tomorrow. Learn more at fnbalaska.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. For years, the overall narrative for suicides among Native Americans has been dire. Nationally, Native suicide rates documented by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and other sources are persistently higher than all other populations. But there are recent pockets of success in some Native communities. The New Mexico Department of Health just documented a 43% decline for Native suicides in 1 year. The Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health also recorded an almost 40% decrease for the White Mountain Apache tribe in Arizona. We'll hear about the strategies at play there and promising efforts in other parts of the country as well. You can join us. We're at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. I want to caution that today's show deals with the subject of suicide. We want to remind listeners there are resources available, including the National Crisis Hotline, which you can reach by calling or texting 988. Our first guest joins us now from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, Shelby Rowe. She's the executive director of the Suicide Prevention Resource Center. She is Chickasaw. Shelby, hello. Welcome back to Native America Calling.
Shoma, it's so good to be here with you.
It's great to have you. Well, these national suicide rates, they fluctuate. The numbers in generally are currently high right now. What's driving the trend?
So there's a lot of things that could be driving the trend, Sean, but I think, you know, you highlighted early on that rates are dropping in certain areas for our tribal communities, which is really encouraging. And I think a lot of it has to do with the good work that we've had happening in our communities, focused more on bringing youth back to their culture. You know, nationally, there's a lot of things that can impact it. I always break it down to people ask me, well, what puts people at risk for suicide? There's a few factors. One is feeling disconnected, feeling that you don't belong. The other is feeling like you're a burden, that people would be better off without you. And then living in an unsafe environment, having access to lethal means. And so in prevention, you know, it can get much more complicated, of course, when we don't have much time, but that's kind of like a short Cliff Notes version. And in prevention, we try to push those things apart. We try to make sure everyone feels connected. We try to make sure that people feel like they have a purpose, that you're not a burden to your family, to your community, that you have a purpose, you have a role. And then making sure that people are in safe and healthy environments. If we can conquer those three, we can really reduce suicide rates. And I think we see that happening in different areas in Indian country, and it's really encouraging.
That first factor that you shared, the feeling of being disconnected, the pandemic, we had so many situations where people felt isolated, they felt alone. How did the pandemic influence suicide rates among Native people, and have we seen any changes since then?
You know, we saw some pockets where it stayed fairly level and others where it increases. You know, one area where it increased would be, you know, the region, HHS kind of divides up the nation. And for California, Hawaii, Nevada, Arizona, the rates went up. I mean, you could definitely notice for that region, their rate was 10.2 per 100,000 in 2020. And then in 2021, it was 14.7. So went up dramatically, almost a 50% increase. But the good news is that's coming back down. But yes, I mean, people felt more isolated, and our grieving practices were impacted. So if you were touched by suicide or other loss in your family, that was a complicated grief because we weren't able to come together and do rituals, do ceremony, and that, you know, only exacerbated the risk for those who were already struggling with their own mental health and then losing loved ones to COVID, to other causes, made it a lot harder. It just really increased that burden.
I was interested to learn that the risk of suicide in Native communities peaks at age 35, then it begins to decrease. Shelby, is that trend unique to Indian country?
You know, it is. It is. When we look at mainstream, you know, general population, look at all the numbers, and then specifically for white Americans, the rates, you know, start to go up and peak at about 65 or 75. They continue to raise. And what we've seen historically with our suicide rates in Indian country, that we are much higher than general population, our rates with our young boys. Our 15 to 24, 15 to 30, we have a lot of work to do to help them feel safe, protected, connected to their communities, living lives worth living. But at about 35, we see, you know, the line crosses from the general population and continues to go down. And, you know, there needs to be a lot more research, but anecdotally, I think a lot of us, you know, in the field feel that it's the strong community ties, and that as people get closer to elder status, you know, or being an auntie, being an uncle, that you feel that you have a role. You have a role in your family. You have a role in your community, and that serves as a protective factor.
All right. And going back to these national statistics about Native American suicide rates, what else do we need to understand? Are there any nuances that might need clarification? Any challenges with getting good, accurate data?
Yes. I think I want the good, accurate. The data that we have from CDC, it's getting a little better. Starting in 2018, they started tracking data which showed tribal, you know, and other races, so that it wasn't just people that said, I am American Indian, Alaska Native only. You know, a lot of our numbers, a lot of our relatives, the data would get lost in the category of, you know, two or more races. Now, you know, they have data available where you can look at for individuals who are white and American Indian, Alaska Native, black and American Indian, Alaska Native. But the downside of that is probably all of the coroners and medical examiners are not taking advantage of those new categories on death certificates. And we have just systemically been miscategorized on race when it comes to good death data. You know, with so many of us, over 70% of tribal folks living in urban areas, when they categorize you, oftentimes we get miscategorized as a different race than tribal. So our data, you know, is getting better, but always look at those numbers with a grain of salt, because depending on what race you look like when someone first, you know, glances at you, that may be what you're categorized as on your death certificate, especially if there's not family around to make sure that that's accurate. So the data is hard to get, but I would say on that it's consistently bad, which makes it reliable, if that makes sense, that it's bad for everyone. But knowing when you look at that death data, and also knowing that a lot of the, you know, the percentages vary depending on who you ask, but a lot of overdose deaths that are probably suicides get miscategorized as an accidental overdose. And so some of our numbers are hidden in that. So if someone is looking at suicide rates in their community, I would really encourage them to also be looking at overdose deaths, because there's a lot of overlap.
Shelby, we mentioned the 988 crisis line at the beginning of the show. It's a relatively new tool
to work against suicide cases. Has it made a difference so far?
You know, we know with call volume that it has been substantially, you know, going up, especially with texting and chat. So we know that Americans are using it. The state of Washington seems to be doing the best job at reaching our relatives. They passed a funding bill for 988 so that their state could sustain it. And one of the first things that they tagged onto that was that there would be a call center specific for the tribal population. So that has become Native and Strong Lifeline. So for individuals in Washington state, you have an option to press 4 if you want to talk to individuals who are Native like you and who may understand your issues a little better. I would love to see that, you know, across the nation. So far, that hasn't happened. But, you know, it is difficult. There's data that's available. You can go on 988's website on SAMHSA, and they've got a dashboard. But it is really hard to collect race and ethnicity data when someone is having the worst day of their life. So that data is really scant on who is calling and if they identified what their race or ethnicity was. But Washington State collecting good data. So we know that people are using it. And, you know, we're seeing drops in our rates in areas. So it is encouraging. I think we still need a couple more years under our belt to really stand firm in it. But it's a really exciting trend because our rates have not dropped in a while in Indian Country. And it is nice to see us bringing those down and keeping our relatives safer.
Shelby, thank you for kicking off the conversation. You mentioned how the 988 crisis line works in Washington State, and we happen to have a guest on the show today who is in Washington State. Her name is Amanda Whitecrane, and she is very qualified to talk about the 988 Crisis Lifeline program and how it works in Washington with its Native-specific focus. And we're going to hear from Amanda on the other side of this break, but we do have to take a brief pause here. And we will be back in just a short time, but I encourage people to call us right now if you'd like to join this conversation. Maybe you have some insights to share with regard to suicide prevention in your community. Maybe you're familiar with a promising program, or maybe you have personal experience with the issue as well. Just give us a call. We'd really like to hear from some listeners today. 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. Researchers are worried about a recent uptick in skin cancer rates among Native Americans. It's a warning to get the message out better to Native populations about ways to prevent the disease and how to get screened. We'll hear more about the factors that might go into increased cancer risks and what people should keep an eye out for. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Trickster Cultural Center hosts the 11th Annual National Gathering of American Indian Veterans to honor veterans and military personnel of all cultures, eras, and branches in a Native way. Trickster Cultural Center's National Gathering of American Indian Veterans is open to the public at no charge Friday, July 18th and Saturday, July 19th in Schaumburg, Illinois. More at tricksterculturalcenter.org/national-gathering-2025. Trickster Cultural Center supports this show.
Yolanda, 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 Yolanda,
You're listening to Native America Calling. We're talking about suicide prevention. Are you familiar with efforts in your community that are making a difference? What's needed to address issues related to suicide where you live? Let us know. Call us 1-800-996-2848. 1-800-996-2848. We've got the phone lines open. We're waiting for your call. So please join the conversation. Our next guest joins us from Kennewick, Washington, Amanda White Crane. She is the director of the Native and Strong Lifeline with Volunteers of America, Western Washington. She's Northern Cheyenne from Lame Deer, Montana. Amanda, good morning. Welcome to our show.
Hi, good morning. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you on the air, and we just got done listening to our first guest, Shelby Rowe, explaining how this 988 Crisis Line works in Washington State. There's a Native-specific aspect to it. Tell us more about it.
Yeah, so we began in November of 2022, and from the advocation of the American Indian Health Commission, Vicki Lowe, and Tina Orwell, who's now our senator in Washington State, and with the passing of the House Bill 1477, and it was really to, like Shelby said, prioritize the development and operation of a tribal crisis line and really the first of its kind. So as you mentioned, we're fully peer-led. Everybody has a connection to their community and really about the work around having a safe and open space to call and be part of that 988 system with the option for. So really powerful work that was advocated for in Washington State. And prior to that, we had our Native Resource Hub with Volunteers America, Western Washington, which is with the same intent of navigating behavioral health systems and really improving access and services for the Native American community.
This sounds really promising. So it sounds also like there are Native American counselors on the other end of the line when somebody calls. Tell us more about how it works. So let's say a Native person is in distress. They call 988 in Washington State. How do they get connected with these Native people on the other end?
Yeah, they go through the menu and select option four. They'll be greeted by a tribal crisis counselor, and they will lead with their tribal affiliation and really hopes that they feel connected and knowing that they are Native American. And truly, it's anything they'd like to speak on. If they're feeling unsafe, if there's things they'd just like to talk through with an individual, we're here. And then if there are some safety concerns and really things where we want to make sure that individual is safe, we will call law enforcement and really working with any crisis systems that tribes have here in Washington State to understand what will get this individual the best care and really consider their identity of being Native American.
Amanda, I would imagine that being a counselor in a situation like this, it's probably a very, you're dealing with a lot of different people and people have different needs and they connect in different ways. But is there an underlying message or maybe even a strategy that someone working at a crisis line, a Native person working at a crisis line, will use when trying to help somebody who's really suffering?
Yeah, our strategy really is to be that open ear and person and have conversations. So having a open-ended conversation that is really absent of any judgment. Like mentioned, it's just really the individual on the other line has that same experience and may have, you know, similar situations in the past of navigating the mental health system. So really that is the core piece. And again, just really understanding that culture is a huge aspect of when we're looking at mental health in our communities. And what that looks like can be very different for different tribes or individuals. But having that base knowledge of how historical trauma has impacted our community, has really led to some of these, you know, statistics is something foundational that it can't be trained necessarily. And really the approach is that there's somewhere to call and that we understand where there's also somewhere to go and connect with that community aspect, because it could be just an individual looking for that traditional healer, that traditional aspect that will really connect them in to a overall system that is not causing additional harm or just really brushing over the identity piece of Native Americans.
What's been the impact so far, Amanda? Are you noticing any improved outcomes having this Native and strong lifeline that Native people in Washington can reach out to?
Yeah, as Shelby mentioned, we kind of have been just gauging call volume as an aspect of we're getting the word out. We're becoming somebody trusted within the Native community. And our call volume increased by 48% from our first year to our second year. And we're really excited about the chat and text program and launching that. That will double our team of counselors and really help us reach, you know, the youth demographic. And that's our hope, is that with the us being embedded within 988, that is really powerful in terms of, as you mentioned, these are hard conversations and hard things to have. And we are a 24/7 line. So if there are people that you're really concerned about, that's a statistic that we're proud of, is that we get third party callers. So those concerned aunties, those concerned relatives of saying, I'm, you know, looking for these resources and I need somebody to really have this individual call. We really want to see that, you know, connection of we're trusted and we can be really hold the situation in a sacred way so that we can be of the most service. So we're really excited about that and really, you know, having those connections with all of the Washington State tribes who are expanding out their crisis services. So having the first tribal DCR in our state and our first kind of data sovereignty agreement with the healthcare authority to say what data is important to us, especially with somebody in crisis. So all these things that are developing and projects are just indication that we're really making sure there's somebody to call and a place to go in a crisis situation for our relatives.
I'm glad you mentioned the data sovereignty piece, because we've done several shows over the last year on data sovereignty and just the challenges with regard to safeguarding and making sure that data that pertains to Native people is secure. So I would imagine that's just a whole nother element that you folks are having to deal with, as well as just the day-to-day tasks of managing the crisis line. I'm also curious, Amanda, what types of Native people are you looking for to be counselors on the crisis line?
That's a great question. So we have, our requirement is to be Native and to have that community level of understanding. We hire across the state because we are 24/7. We really are looking for individuals that have that peer experience of going through something in their community, and that aspect of that power and empowerment of reaching out for help. So that's really part of what we're doing here, is really saying it's okay to reach out. It's okay. You're more powerful for doing so, you know, and that having that conversation over the phone or text with a youth and meeting them where they're at is huge. So really looking for individuals that have that connection to mental health and understanding of some of the barriers that the Native American community face is huge for us.
And going back to people who might be using the 988 Lifeline, is it okay for somebody to call on behalf of someone else, maybe a concerned relative or a friend?
Yes, yes. That's another reason why we're here. And especially, too, for anybody trying to navigate, just looking for help for an individual. We really make those connections with understanding the resources within Washington State and understanding that it's hard when an individual is asking for help to catch them in that short time frame, right, of getting into either an inpatient facility or having that support right away is so timely. So we definitely encourage concerned relatives, anybody that would really need that support, to call in to our line.
All right. Thank you, Amanda. And the phone lines are open for anyone who would like to join the conversation. 1-800-99-NATIVE. Maybe you have personal experience using the 988 Crisis Lifeline. If so, let us know. How did it work for you? What was the impact? 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's now go to Albuquerque, New Mexico, where we have Dr. Deidre Yellowhair on the line. She is a research assistant professor in the Division of Community Behavioral Health for the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Science at the University of New Mexico. She is Dene. Deidre, hello, and welcome to Native America Calling.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Well, New Mexico's a bright spot for Native American suicide statistics. We mentioned that the rates in the state declined significantly from 2022 to 2023. What's behind the trend?
You know, I really think that it has taken a multi-agency, multi-level grassroots effort to really bring those numbers to what they are now. I think it really reflects the change in the narrative of our communities, reclaiming the narrative that reflects the strength, the vibrancy, and the life in connecting with each other and connecting with families and connecting with communities that has really brought those numbers down. New Mexico, you know, when I talk about a multi-agency effort, back in 2011, New Mexico legislature passed an act to form a clearinghouse for Native American suicide prevention. That clearinghouse was housed at the University of New Mexico's Division of Community Behavioral Health. It's now called the Honoring Native Life Program because stakeholders believed that giving it a proper name to honor life was more culturally relevant. And since then, there's just been multiple agencies from behavioral health professionals, community members, certified peer support workers, all the way up to the state capitol where the legislature is providing that financial assistance to ensure that communities are getting the help that they need. So it really takes a community, it really takes a state, a village, multiple agencies coming together to address concerns within communities, and this one is just like a really great example of how community members were connecting with each other and talking about 988 resources, talking about therapy, and normalizing some of the stigma around getting help and asking for help, and really normalizing the empowerment that is in seeking help. So I really do believe that it came from multiple efforts from the New Mexican community really coming together to have a positive impact.
All right. Thank you, Deidre. We've got our first caller of the day on the line. This is Mario. He's also in Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening on KUNM radio. Mario, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Yeah. Thank you for the call. With this issue, So I once served as local leader for a community within 70 miles of Albuquerque called Torreon Star Lake Chapter. And all the years I served, we never got any really real updates on this issue with the data, you know, as ethically broken down to show exactly what's happening in our communities. Once in the past, you know, local communities, we experienced a 400% increase of suicide ideation at a local school that served my community, and we're very concerned. And back then, they were talking about using Medicaid to create wraparound services for students. And so, I also served on the board for a large health nonprofit, and we're trying to figure out ways where we can create this idea of wraparound services for behavioral health as a way to start moving this forward. And we could never really get a lot of key stakeholders to really break down and have high-level planning meetings on this. And so I think the issues here, you know, I'm listening. I'm glad to hear the great data coming out of New Mexico, but I, as former leader, could never even get that. I, as current researchers, can't find any of these data affecting community well-being. Locally, we had a research project where we conceptualized local community well-being from the Navajo perspective. And we really wanted to be sure that we have enough data to start creating policy that actually fits and creates centers of well-being. So, and I think that's a first. Then the last thing I want to say is that we have to see that all these disparate communities are all being affected by this level of data of suicide and suicide ideation. We have to rethink the question is what is happening that's creating these outcomes in all of these different communities all across the nation. Is it because that IHS and the Department of Interior has been completely underfunded for as long as they've ever been created, and or because we don't have title to the land that we can't create enough commonwealth to actually create services for our own people? Mm-hmm. Is it the continued oppression of the people, the main reason why that people are feeling this way? And so thank you for the call and the time. I appreciate it.
Mario, thank you. That's a really, really good call. And I do want to have Dr. Deidre Yellowhair respond, but we're going to have to go to break. So we're going to go ahead and hold off on that response. But the systemic challenges that you identify, that's certainly something that we need to consider. So really appreciate you pointing that out, as well as this limited access to data. And we'll have Dr. Yellowhair respond after the break, and perhaps other communities in New Mexico share similar feelings with regard to how much data they're able to access or the accuracy of that data. So we're going to go ahead and hold off for just a moment. Take a short break. We'll come back, and we've got the phone lines open for anyone else who would like to join the conversation. Just give us a call, 1-800-996-2848.
Support by AARP. Despite their service to our country, U.S. military vets, active duty service members, and their families are targeted by con artists significantly more than civilians, and are 40% more likely to lose money than civilians. Vigilance is our number one weapon against fraud. You have the power to protect yourself. If an offer sounds too good to be true, it probably is. More at aarp.org/vetsfraudnetwork.
Did you know that one person can save up to 8 lives and heal dozens more through the gift of organ and tissue donation? Give hope to thousands of people across the U.S. waiting for a life-saving organ transplant. Learn more about the power of organ, eye, and tissue donation with Life Center Northwest, the organ procurement organization serving all of Alaska, at lcnw.org. That's lcnw.org. Are you or someone you care about looking to take their education to the next level? Native Forward Scholars Fund is here to help. With awards up to $30,000, Native Forward Scholars Fund is dedicated to supporting Native students as they pursue higher education. With Native Forward Scholarships, you can overcome financial barriers and open doors to a world of opportunities. Native Forward Scholars Fund, working to build a brighter future and empower Native students one scholarship at a time. Info and applications at nativeforward.org, who support this show.
Fry bread. That's the message. Support by Val's Fry Bread, providing her famous fry bread mixes and other products in wholesale and retail quantities at valsfrybread.com. Fry bread that will take you home, available wherever you live.
Skook dash. For more than 40 years, Ramona Farms has revived ancient traditional foods, tepary beans, pinoli, polentas, and more, all from store.ramonafarms.com. Ramona Farms supports this show. Om nye.
You've got to tune to Native America Calling. We're talking about suicide prevention in Native communities. And there's still time if you'd like to join the conversation. You can even comment anonymously if you'd like. Call us 1-800-996-2848. How has a local suicide prevention or behavioral health program affected your life? Let us know. 1-800-996-2848. We have Dr. Deidre Yellowhair on the line from the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Science at the University of New Mexico. And Deidre, we just heard from a caller there in New Mexico lamenting the fact that not a lot of data in their community with regard to these suicide issues. Do you hear similar complaints from other communities in New Mexico, Native communities?
I think there's going to always be issues in data collection until we get that data sovereignty and start collecting our own data using processes and research methods that are culturally sensitive and culturally safe to our communities. There's a lot of historical trauma systemically with institutions that are doing medical research, research in general, or coming into tribal communities. So part of the issue is that systemic strategic underservice that tribal communities have had to endure. But overcoming that is really, it really is going to take a multidisciplinary approach, because while we can say, oh, it's an issue in the infrastructure that doesn't support getting telehealth needs to rural areas, well, we need people to put up those lines. We need people to invest in those infrastructures and keep the upkeep. Once we get all those infrastructures in place, we need behavioral health professionals. So educationally, we need to train more tribal members who are counselors, who are therapists, who are psychologists, who are researchers to gather that data. So just like there's not any one way or any one cause or any one thing that can pinpoint why some of our data has been so large in the past, it's going to take a lot of different resources to continue to combat it. So data is something that we often get lost in for many of the reasons that both Amanda and Shelby were talking about. But what we have found here is that just making those connections and starting to talk with communities and community stakeholders about what their needs are is really important in addressing some of the intervention, prevention, and postvention.
Okay. Deidre, you mentioned the approach, and I'm curious to know how the approach has changed over the years, because I'm in my 50s, and one of my very first experiences with a relative passing away was the result of a suicide. I was 6 years old, and I remember at the time how it was dealt with in our family and in our community, and it was very much of a just don't say anything. Just keep it to yourself. Nobody needs to know what really happened. How has it changed? And I know there's a lot of cultural approaches now, and you talked about that earlier, but how have you seen it change? How is it evolving in terms of the approach?
I think one of the approaches that I have noticed in my very short career is that rather than focusing on the deficits within a community, the why are these things happening, we are starting to focus on the strengths within communities and the empowerment that tribal communities, families, and individuals have in connecting with their culture, finding that connection, finding that way of feeling like they belong, finding that purpose, and feeling safe in their communities. And so approaching everything from a strength-based perspective, what are the strengths of an individual community and a culture, a tradition? You know, how can people connect to those things to build resiliency, to build that ability to overcome some of these difficult times? You know, death is a natural part of life cycle. What we don't expect is for a young person to and have their lives ended in an abrupt, unnatural way. And suicide is abrupt and it's unnatural. And it brings with it a lot of grief, not only to the person's family, but to the community as a whole. And yeah, we, in many of our cultures, we're taught not to talk about it. But, you know, in creating spaces where Indigenous and tribal community members can then go into medical spaces, become therapists, become psychologists, we become those translators of, you know, these Western ideologies and research to our communities, and we help bridge that gap in how to talk about taboo subjects in a culturally relevant way to create safe spaces for our community members and our relatives so that we can address these things from our perspective in a way that is for us, by us, to benefit us and our cultures and our traditions. And that's the strength and the beauty of our tribal nations all across the United States and beyond, is that we carry the strength that, you know, that, you know, in Western academic, we often talk about evidence-based practices. I like to remind communities and individuals that we are the evidence. The fact that we are still here, that many of our communities are vibrant, we speak our languages, we participate in our cultural activities, that is the evidence. That's the evidence that our culture and our traditions can create that connection, can create that safety and all the positive outcomes for a life of longevity.
Thank you, Deidre, very much. Really appreciate all of your insights and all of your expertise as well. Phone lines are open, 1-800-99-NATIVE, if you'd like to get in on this conversation. Let's now head north to Nome, Alaska, where we have Lynette Heppa on the line. She is the director of the Department of Health and Social Services for the North Slope Borough. She is a Inupiaq. Lynette, good morning, and welcome to Native America Calling.
Good morning. I do want to make a quick correction. I'm just visiting Nome. I'm actually from Utqiagvik, Alaska.
All right. Thank you for that clarification. Well, let's talk more about your community and what the suicide prevention programming looks like there along the North Slope Bureau. Excuse me, I'm having a hard time pronouncing today, but what does it look like?
Right now, this past year, we have really been working on coming together as local community entities and putting our resources out into the community as a joint effort. So kind of what it's looking like now is making sure that we're having presence in schools. We're running healthy family activities throughout our communities on a regular basis that families can come to. And just really increasing our efforts with the youth at the moment.
Healthy family activities. Describe those.
They could be a bunch of different things. We run monthly gatherings where, let's say, Christmas time, we had gingerbread making, coloring, stocking making. So families would just come. We have a bunch of activities. They do it with their children. And they're able to bring it home or hang out and connect with other people in the community. We also have like paint nights that happen quarterly, so people are able to come. Our last one we ran, we had people make balus, our traditional knives, and inside of it we put people were able to paint things that they valued, whether it was their family, the culture, whatever they wanted to put in it. So different fun things like that.
Lynette, you work with a lot of young people, as I understand. You're a basketball coach. When you do an activity or you facilitate a discussion with young people and you talk about these issues with regard to suicide and mental health, what do they tell you? What do you hear from them in terms of what they feel the risks are, or what the solutions could be?
Oh, that's a great question. Recently, we actually had a focus group within our high school kids, and some of the things that we heard from them was having like a crisis line that's with our own local people. So having people from Utqiagvik or from one of our other villages on the North Slope who are able to respond and talk to the youth. Other things are youth groups surrounding cultures. So they asked for like young hunters mentorship groups or sewing talking circles or language circles as well. And also just peer-led groups, so having more youth be involved or get trained in behavioral health. and have just some a peer that other kids, youth, can talk to. One of the efforts that we did recently was actually a suicide prevention tour, we called it, and we traveled within all of our 8 villages on the slope. And we had a guest speaker talk about his experience and his son committing suicide. But while we did that, we also tied in the QPR training, the question, persuade, and refer. And we had 88 students on the slope get trained in it within the 8 different schools, actually the 11 different schools. And then we also held a evening carnival for families that had the different access, the different resources from different entities on the North Slope as well, where families were able to come and get information, but also have a fun time and play carnival games with their kids.
That all sounds really promising. We've got a caller here joining us, an anonymous caller. So I appreciate you calling in. You're on the air. What are your comments? Oh, we just lost the call. No call. Apologize for that. Lynette, back to you. I understand that when a suicide happens in the community, it can turn into what's called a suicide cluster. Can you explain more what that means and how behavioral health workers such as yourself can respond to that?
Yeah, so it's when we have a suicide after a suicide, and we actually just went through that. And it happened to be 3 youth. So what our response was coming together with our different social services organizations, whether they're tribal or local government. We met together, spread out our resources. So we had 3 different entities at our high school, middle school, and elementary running grief groups and just social emotional groups. So one of the biggest things that we're doing is having a presence of our behavioral health staff in the actual schools talking to the kids. Because we're still rebuilding our behavioral health programs post-pandemic. So we're trying to make the efforts to make the connections to the kids with these people who work for us and to build trust and have them feel comfortable talking to us. So we do have scheduled times throughout the week that we have behavioral health staff at the schools. And they have, the teachers know, like, if you have a student identified, send them over, or they could refer them to the different groups that we run. So like I said before earlier, right now we're running a grief group and a healthy coping skills group as well. Other things that we do outside of the school is responding to the families, the affected families. We have sometimes a community leader and a behavioral health counselor, clinician, go over to the family's house and have just a debriefing with them if they need the support, and just really just be there for them.
And the impact, do you think these efforts are making a big difference?
I hope so. we hear good things. I think especially with us being in the schools, I think I see it, like being a coach and actually knowing the kids and also seeing my staff in there and having kids recognize my staff and they're comfortable enough to go up to them and joke around and talk to them. And I think that's something that's promising because a lot of our staff that we have now are fairly new within the last year. So just knowing and seeing that our people are engaging with the community is really important. So I think and I hope it is doing something. And if not, you know, we're always open to listening to what the community has to say and adjusting what we're doing.
Lynette, we have listeners all over the country, there in Alaska where you are, all here in the lower 48 as well. And some of them are probably thinking to themselves right now, well, what can I do just to promote or foster just a healthy mental environment in my home for my children, for my grandchildren, for whoever comes into my house? What's your advice? How can we do that collectively as Native people?
I think I know earlier I heard reducing the stigma about behavioral health is just talking with people, you know, talking with your kids, talking with your grandparents, your aunties about how you're feeling. I know growing up for myself, I definitely felt the stigma. I didn't like to talk about, you know, if I was feeling sad or if I was frustrated or angry at something. It was just holding it in and internalizing it. And so making the effort and teaching our kids, you know, that it's okay to feel these feelings and that we're here for you is a really important aspect in my perspective.
Thank you, Lynette. Shelby Rowe, I want to go back to you for our closing comments, our last word. We've got about a minute before we wrap up. What are your thoughts with regard to just fostering improvement, healthier mental health in our communities, as well as any other programs or options that could be out there?
Sure. I think one thing, I just really appreciated hearing and learning from the other panelists today. So you all put together a fabulous panel. I've learned so much from the others. And I think, you know, for our communities where speaking about suicide is taboo, I would encourage people in communities where it may not be allowed to use the word suicide, we can all talk about building communities where everyone feels like they belong, where everyone wants to stay. And so, like, to, you know, see that shift that we just turn to, you know, how can we make this community, how can we make our families, our workplaces, our schools, a place where everyone wants to stay and to be included. But so I think on that, other than, you know, that just breaks it down. I mean, we could list different curriculums, but really at the end of the day, you know, are we making sure that all of our relatives are in a community where they're valued and know their purpose and have lives worth living?
All right. Appreciate it very much. All of our guests on the show today, Shelby Rowe, Dr. Deidre Yellowhair, Amanda Whitecrane, and Lynette Heppa. Thank you for your time and your expertise. Join us again Monday when we'll look at ways to counter rising rates of skin cancer among Native populations. Have a safe weekend. I'm Sean Spruce.
See Renewal's expertise in energy, housing, land use, fire protection, and more in multi-jurisdictional environments helps tribes leverage existing assets, grow capacity, and gain competitive advantage. See Renewal supports this show. SEERenewal.com.
Support by DT Track, your healthcare partner, providing access to a nationwide network of qualified healthcare temporary staff, including medical billing professionals that optimize your revenue cycles. DT Track will be at the Reservation Economic Summit, booth 214.
Support provided by Amerind. Amerind is 100% tribally owned and partners with tribes and their businesses to provide affordable commercial insurance coverage, protect tribal sovereignty, and strengthen Native American communities by helping to keep dollars in Indian country. Information about property, liability, commercial auto, and workers' comp available at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.